Welcome to Triple Take, the podcast where we talk to interesting people about the book, album, and film that shaped them. I'm Carla Jean Whitley.
I'm John Hammontree.
And I'm Matt Scalise.
Our guest today is Maria Taylor, a Birmingham native singer-songwriter who has gone off and left us to go back to California, but I'm not pouting or anything. Maria, you've got an album coming out in the next couple of weeks called In the Next Life, and I believe this is your sixth solo effort, is that right?
I believe so. I sort of lose count.
Yeah, I mean,
there's... I think it is my sixth.
A nice problem to have that it becomes hard to keep up with after a while because there are so many.
I know, with Little Red Rocket and Azure Ray and this, I think it's maybe my 15th or 16th. I can't remember.
Well, and to that point, the album seems to explore sort of the many lives you've lived, so to speak. And musically, that's easy to see with all the different bands and different iterations of bands that you've been in. And then, of course, it incorporates some voices that have shown up throughout your career. Was that incorporation of those different musicians sort of an intentional nod to that theme?
Yes and no. I mean, some of it was just accessibility, you know, because where I am and who was near.
Mm-hmm.
But also, yes, I did want to have people that have played a huge role in my past and present lives to play a role in this record. So, I think it was a little bit of both.
Cool. Well, it's neat to kind of peel back some of those layers as somebody who has been a fan of your music for at least a decade now, which, you know, as we've kind of referenced, is actually not that long considering how long you've been at it. It's neat to be able to listen and on the one hand hear like, oh, I like this album, it's great, but then kind of go a little bit deeper and pick up on all of those things. And I wondered, too, how have motherhood and the various places you've lived, have those affected your songwriting or your process at all?
Well, motherhood has affected it greatly. I've just had to relearn the process,
yeah.
You know, because I used to just write whenever I felt the inspiration, and I would just put down everything I was doing and sit down for as long as I needed to. And that's absolutely not an option anymore. So that's been challenging, but I feel like I'm starting to get the hang of it. You know, now my whole life revolves around working and doing anything, like anything that I need to do comes second to my kids. And making music is way down the totem pole. You know, for me, like eating and showering, all that is that
higher priority.
Second and third. And then, yeah, it's on my priority list. So making music is on down there where it used to be first. But I'm finding time, and it's just, it takes a lot longer.
Yeah.
But it's more precious to me, and I think that's why this record is so precious to me. I mean, it took a long time, and I found these little nuggets of time, and I really used my time wisely. And I don't know. I had to find more discipline, too. I've never been a disciplined person in my life. And so I've really had to find the discipline to, like, when I have this time, like, I cannot turn on the TV. I cannot turn on, you know, Facebook. I have to write. And I've never been good at that. And so I've learned to do that a little better. So it was challenging, but I don't know. It was, I made the record finally. So,
yeah, there was a good little gap of time between this and the last album. And of course, you had another kid in the process, too. So
yep.
I'm sure that only made it that much more complicated.
But, you know, I didn't even write for a long time. I wasn't feeling it. And I just didn't even attempt. So there was a good bit of time where I just didn't even try, which I think that helped this record because I felt like it was bubbling up and I could really feel like I needed to write.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that made it a little easier because there was some things that needed to come out musically and lyrically.
Very cool. So now I do have to ask, you know, been keeping an eye on your Facebook page, looking for upcoming tour dates. And I know you've got a record release party that is a very long way from here. So do you have any Alabama dates in the future?
I don't know. I want to, and I'm sure that I will. Right now, my only plans, I'm playing this show here, and then I am going to go to Europe in February, mostly Germany. I have a German label that's also releasing this record. Mm-hmm. I'm releasing this one myself on my new record label, Flower Moon Records, here in the U.S. And then I'm also working with a label in Germany. So I'm going to go over there, which is just easier to bring the family because with the time difference, like when the kids go to bed, normally their bedtime is 8 o'clock here, which is, you know, 2 a.m. over there. So they can actually stay backstage and stay awake and it doesn't mess with their schedule. So it's a little easier. And the drives are so short over there. So I can go for 2 weeks and we only have 3-hour drives every day, which is also easier for them. So I'm trying to work out the logistics, but I definitely need to make it. I want to make it home to see my family soon. And so when I do that, I will most definitely incorporate a show because I also happen to have the two best musicians, or three, my dad, my sister, and my brother mm-hmm. in the world that live in Alabama, in Birmingham. So I think that we should all get together and play a show when I come home to visit.
Yeah, it would be a lost opportunity otherwise.
Yeah, so it'll happen. I just don't exactly know when.
Okay, well, we will try to be patient.
You know, now we have prequel schedules. We have all these things that I have to work around. I'm not quite yet ready to leave my kids to tour, so yeah. I have to work around, again, their schedules.
Right. Well, we will certainly keep an eye on any future news, and of course we'll gladly share it with our listeners via, you know, Twitter and social media and stuff.
Birmingham is a priority.
Yes. Well, so, and then of course I'll also buy my tickets because that's how we do. I've already got the album on pre-order too. So cool. Well, we of course brought you here today to talk about the book, album, and film that have had the greatest influence on you. And you know, I will say sometimes people tell us this is a really hard question.
It is.
And it's hard to narrow it down to just one. So I do fully intend to sneak both of your book picks into our conversation.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm not complaining about it at all. Okay. In fact, sometimes we get really excited and do that on purpose. So if you will tell our listeners what book, album, and film you selected.
Okay, well, the album which has had the most impact on me is, without a doubt, Carole King Tapestry. And the book, well, I guess the two different books, one is Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which is by Jonathan Safran Foer, but also this children's book by Nancy Tillman, which is Wherever You Are, My Love Will Find You. And then also the movies, on opposite ends of the spectrum, we have Parenthood, and then we also have Shortcuts, directed by Robert Altman.
A very interesting pair here, and you said at the top here that you thought they were kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, and certainly I think when you talk about tone, they definitely are. But there's some similarities between these two movies that you picked, Parenthood and Shortcuts. You know, I think they're both movies that are, first of all, kind of have a large cast, and they're about a big group of people and kind of how all of their lives intersect. So I guess to start off talking about these two movies, is there something about that in particular you think that appeals to you, this idea of kind of these big ensembles and it's about all of these lives and the way that they sort of interact with each other?
Well, I've never, ever thought of it. I didn't even think about that similarity in the two movies until you just said it. But, I mean, when you just said it, it was like a light bulb that went off in my head. And, I mean, I guess, yeah, I bet there's a couple of reasons. One, I have a short attention span, and I bet that's one reason, is because, you know, you have these new stimuli that are constantly – that might be one reason, and maybe that also kind of parallels my life a little bit, because, I mean, my life, I have so many friends in different parts of the world, and I've lived mm-hmm. in so many different places, and they all connect in some way, and I love that. And so maybe I find some sort of similarity in those kind of movies and in my life. So maybe I don't know. Maybe that's why I like them. But that's really interesting. I never even thought about it. You're right. Those two movies are similar in that way.
So tell me a bit about kind of how you came into contact with these movies. Like, was this about the same time that you saw these, or did when you, you know, how long have you been watching these two movies?
No, Parenthood, I was young. I was probably,
yeah.
I don't remember, like maybe junior high. And it was just one of those, you know, family movies we watched. My family watched it. And I just loved it. I've always loved babies. And, you know, like everyone's having babies in that movie. I just remember me and my mom
yep.
crying at the end of that movie when everyone's having babies. And I'm just a sucker for family. I have a great family, and I love watching TV shows and movies about family. I love family connections. It's just, I'm a sucker for it. So that movie is just all about family, and I mean, that's why I love it. And it's about the hard times and the good times that go along with family. And Shortcuts, when did I see that? I don't even remember the first time I saw it, but the first time I saw it, I loved it. And then I happened to see it again, and I was like, oh, I saw that movie.
I would assume not
as
a kid for that one.
Not as a kid, but you know, maybe
yeah.
so maybe 17, 18. I don't really remember.
Yeah.
When did I see that movie first? I can't remember, but then I really liked it, and I started, you know, I watched it a couple other times. And then a good friend of mine bought me a book, and it was that Raymond Carver Book of Short Stories. What was it called? It's what we talk about when we talk about love. And I was
yeah.
reading it.
Okay.
And I suddenly was like, oh, wait a minute. This is like a couple of the stories. I was like, this is from that movie that I love, Shortcuts. So then I rewatched the movie. And then I just kind of got obsessed with the movie all over again because there was this Raymond Carver connection. And it just reaffirmed, like, why I love that movie. And it's got such an amazing cast. Like, I've always been a huge Tom
oh, yeah.
Waits fan, and when Tom Waits was in that movie, I was like, holy shit, like, this is, oops, can I cuss in this? Sorry. Yeah, I don't know. It's just got an amazing cast, and you know, it was set even, I remember watching it back then and how it was set in California. I've always had some affinity to California, and now I live here. Even Parenthood, all see, huh, interesting, both of these movies are set in Los Angeles.
There's more in common
now,
yeah,
I live
than
here.
Maybe you thought at first. So
see, this podcast is teaching me a lot about myself. Thank you guys.
have you seen much else from Robert Altman? Are you a fan of his movies in general?
I've seen Popeye. He did
yeah. well, I mean,
right,
I,
that was
I
him
asked, yes, it was. I mean, I asked because I think that seems, you know, as we've mentioned, kind of a common thread for his movies. They're usually really big casts, and they sort of wander around between these different characters and different sort of little side stories going on. But this is certainly one that I think is a little bit, you know, darker than some of his other movies. There's sort of a cynicism, I guess, to this movie a little bit. Is that's certainly something that I think appeals to a lot of people when they're kind of in their late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely was into that then. And that's what I was, because I was trying to think about my favorite, when you think about your most influential movies of all times, like I was thinking more about back then, because right now, again,
yeah.
like in the past few years, I mean, I watch kid movies. Like, I just haven't really
right.
spent much time thinking about anything that I love, you know? So, and I was thinking back then, but you're right. I think that things that are more, you know, we were also angsty back then, and things that were the darker side is definitely what I was more inspired by.
If there's a scene, especially from either of these, that is kind of your favorite that really jumps out at you when you think back about these movies.
I mean, in Parenthood, Oh God, there's just so many. I think my favorite, maybe my favorite in Parenthood is when Steve Martin comes out and he says, well, talking about his grandmother and she's saying how wise she is, and he just says, well, if she's so wise, why is she sitting in the neighbor's car? But you have to see the whole scene. But they're talking about how life is a,
yeah.
You know, and talking about how life is a roller coaster, and it's just this beautiful emotional, this emotional part. And then he's like, well, if she's so wise, why is she sitting in the neighbor's car? And then the end, whenever all the babies are being born, and it's just, I don't know, it's beautiful. I always cry during the end of that movie. What's another favorite?
It's very, like, it's a sentimental movie, but it's not cheesy. It doesn't feel like it, you know, it definitely still feels like it has some, you know, it earns the sentiment.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. There's so many in that movie. It's just a classic. I love it. I need to watch it again. Actually, I think I'm going to watch it tonight. It's going to be family movie night tonight. I'm going to get my
good call.
I think it's time for my 4.5-year-old to watch it. I think he'll like it.
I love when people struggle to narrow this down, even though, you know, technically the question is about one piece of work, but it's hard for me to narrow these things down to a singular effort. So let's start with Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. When did you first read that book?
I am trying to remember. I think I was 20. How old was I? 26, maybe?
Okay. Okay.
I think, let me think. Yeah, I think I was about 26. Yeah.
Okay. And at that time, how did you come to the book? Was it a new release at that time? And how did you react?
It was pretty new.
Okay.
And a friend, I was just, you know, I always ask friends for suggestions for books. So I was just asking a friend. I was talking to him, and I just said, hey, and he was an avid reader, and I said, mm-hmm. What's a good book? And he just said, well, I just finished this book. I really liked it. I think you might like it. And so I read it, and, you know, I was just dealing, you know, a few years back, or not even a few years, you know, probably like 3 years before, I was dealing with grief myself.
Mm-hmm.
I had lost a boyfriend at the time. And so I don't know. I think that I also just had a deep connection with this book because it was all about how this little boy and this older grandfather, how they both dealt with grief in their own ways. And it was also about 9/11. And I just think the whole world, you know, spent many, yeah, many years dealing in their own way with that. So I don't know. It just really hit me hard, and it made me laugh, and it made me cry. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just beautiful. I thought it had this magical realism. And so after I read it, I actually read it again, which I don't ever do that. And then I ended up, I bought it for all my friends for Christmas because I just wanted everyone else to read it. And some people didn't like it as much as I did, but
yeah, well,
I really liked it.
To me, there are some books that I turn to when I am experiencing grief or other sort of darker emotions. Sometimes I feel like a book helps me process those feelings, even though the story itself may be completely irrelevant to whatever it is that I'm dealing with. And so I think it's interesting that you came to this book during such a time in your own life. Sometimes I feel like if I need a good cry, for example, there are books that I'll pick up because I know that they will get it out of me if I'm trying to hold in whatever emotion I'm dealing with.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know, I think, yeah. And when you're dealing with death, it's just, you always find comfort when you read, when you're reading or listening to music, or when you find art.
Yeah.
Or just hearing other people, their other stories, how they've dealt with death.
Yeah.
So I think it was just maybe, but maybe not. I should read it now just to see because maybe I would still love it just the same. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was just at that time in my life or if I just would feel the same way now. But whatever it was, I haven't read it since, but I just read it 2 times. And then I still have a few copies and give it to people because mm-hmm. I'm just always like, you should read this book.
Now, have you read it since you became a mother yourself?
I haven't.
I wonder, with the child narrator and these sort of heavy themes, I wonder if that would affect your experience at all, bringing, you know, your own role as a mother to your reading. Because I feel like so many times where we are in life affects how we perceive a story.
Right. You know, I'm going to reread it, and then we should talk again.
Yeah, we'll do like a bonus, a follow-up, and see what that is like. That, I am up for it if you are.
Because having kids, like, I mean, that really changes it changes my perspective on everything and how mm-hmm. I felt about everything.
Well, and on that note, the other book that you brought up is a children's book, Wherever You Are, My Love Will Find You, by Nancy Tillman. And I thought it was interesting that you said many of your friends aren't familiar with it, whereas in my circles, it's like one of the most popular children's books. It tends to elicit really strong reactions from moms. So tell me about your experience with that book.
Just one of my best friends sent it to me when I had Miles, my first mm-hmm. son, and I just couldn't get through it the first time I read it, and I still can't 4.5 years later. I cannot get through that book without like really crying, not just tears. I just like cannot get through it. And yes, I've sent it to like most every friend who gets pregnant. I send them that book, but yeah, not many of my friends have heard of it. But I don't know. I mean, it's just like, it's a very obvious sentiment. Wherever you are, my love will follow you. And it's beautiful. And I think all moms feel this way. But the illustrations are just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. She just has a way of putting it. Like, I honestly would love to work with her. I'd love to write a song to one of her books.
Oh, because, that would be beautiful.
I just feel like when I write songs, sometimes like I really want to like pull the heartstrings, just like she does in that book.
Yeah.
Like and it just, she does it so successfully. Like I'd love to put the book to a song. But yeah, it's just really funny. And my son makes some fun of me because he's like, "Well, why? Why are you crying? Like, why can't you read it?" So he'll try to get me to read it. I'm like, "Miles, I can't get through it." And he goes, just read it. So I try. And I mean, it's just almost a joke because I just can't get through it without the last 3 pages. I'm just sobbing.
Oh, but gosh, I love it.
I don't know. It's just the thought of them, you know, getting older and mm-hmm. going out there in this world and just how strong a mother's love is for these kids and that it's always going to be right there no matter how far away they are. It's just, it's beautiful, it's strong, and it's just so sad. Sorry.
I think I hear a concept album in the making here. Well, and then of course your last album I kept recommending to, well, everybody, but in particular my friends who are mothers, because I just felt like I had several friends who became moms for the first time around the same time as that album's release, and there's so many songs in there that are just, they sort of relate to that experience more from the, you know, the mom's perspective, of course. And so yeah, I can see some parallels between your work and the emotions that book makes you feel.
I can see that too. Maybe I'll have to reach out to her. Collaborate.
I think you should. I would buy that album. If you need
me to be. Okay, so let's jump right into talking about Tapestry by Carole King, which is among the most acclaimed albums of all time, and is certainly a songwriter's album. But tell me when you first heard Tapestry.
It was my first compact disc. My parents gave it to me. I think it was my birthday when I turned 13, and CDs just came out. And yeah, so it was like my first compact disc, because, you know, before that, I mean, I had a million tapes, but
right,
no CDs. And so that was my first time. They gave it to me, and I mean, upon first listen, it blew me away.
Was there a certain song that you remember jumping out in particular?
All of them. I mean, I had already, my mom was a huge James Taylor fan, and so You've Got a Friend, I already was really familiar with his version. So I already, you know, like I knew that song, but all of them. Like, Will You Still Love Me, Tomorrow, I was familiar with the song that already was more popular, like the cover.
Yep.
So I had already heard a lot of the songs, so it was just really cool for me to hear the original versions.
Well, it's rare for an artist to release an album and then almost immediately her contemporaries to start recording covers of the song. I mean, I'm like you. I grew up hearing James Taylor version of You've Got a Friend to the point where I'm embarrassed to say a few months ago we did a music bracket about Southern musicians, and I mistakenly in my write-up of James Taylor referred to You've Got a Friend as a James Taylor song, and I was, you know, I was quickly corrected. And so it's interesting that some of her versions of her own songs, like You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman or You've Got a Friend, you know, will get covered by one of her peers, and then that version will go on and take a life of its own.
Well, lots of them, like, didn't she release them after they were already covered by other people?
Yeah, she wrote...
I think they were already big hits before she released it.
A Natural Woman was, but James Taylor's version came after the album came out, I believe.
And it did.
And then Barbara Streisand did a cover of one of her songs, and so...
So what about, like, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? Oh, yeah, I don't know, but definitely so many of her songs were much bigger. I think her voice is just so unique, but it wasn't necessarily as accessible as some of the people that covered it. I mean, I for one, prefer her versions to all of the songs, but
yeah, no, yeah. I agree. I think I'm not sure that everybody was ready for her as a recording artist at the time, but as a songwriter, everybody wanted to work with her.
Totally.
But then her versions, I mean, she won Album of the Year, she won Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Best Pop Vocal Performance at the Grammys that year. And, you know, I think some of those versions have fallen away, but the album itself continues to be praised by artists 50 years later, or 40 years later.
You know, one of my biggest, I mean, I don't know, I don't have many regrets in my life, just because I'm one of those people that rationalizes all my decisions, even though that's not a good thing. But one, like, a true regret is, when I first moved to Los Angeles the first time, which is about 8 years ago or something, the first week I got here, James Taylor and Carole King were playing at the Troubadour, which is, you know, 500 capacity place, and it's just right in Hollywood, and it's an iconic little tiny spot, and they were playing there, and they were going to play all their hits, and it was, I don't know. Anyway, I got on the guest list to go, and for some reason, I had just moved, I think I was tired, and it was like one of those things that I knew. I was like, this is going to be the best night of my life, I absolutely should go, but for some reason, I didn't go, and this is one of those things I still think about today. I cannot believe that I didn't go to that show, but anyway.
Yeah, no, I think we all have those moments that it's like, if I had just known at the time that this would have been my chance to see that artist. I remember...
I know, but I knew at the time. I just don't know. I think I just was stupid. I don't understand.
Have you seen either one of them separately?
I've seen James Taylor. My mom is a huge James Taylor fan, so my whole life, whenever he played in Birmingham, we would always go and go backstage, and she would shake his hand and just have like an ear-to-ear grin for the next 2 days.
Yeah.
But no, I have never seen her play, and I just can't believe I could have seen her in that tiny place and I didn't go see her.
Oh, that would have been amazing. Well, are there certain songs that you can point to that have influenced your own writing directly of hers?
Are there? No, I think all of them. I mean, I think her honesty is one of the things that immediately just, like, I was completely, I don't know, that was one of the things that I loved the most. Like, she wasn't trying to be anything but herself, and you listened to it and you automatically knew who Carole King was, and it was so warm, and it was, yeah, just so warm and honest. So I just felt like I knew right then that's the kind of artist that I wanted to be. I wasn't going to paint myself to be anyone, like, for good or for bad. I was just going to say exactly how I felt. And,
yeah.
Like, so, I mean, that's how I write my songs. They're very confessional, and they're, you, when you hear my records, you pretty much know exactly what I'm feeling at that point in my life. Just all of her songs are like that, so I feel like they all had that kind of huge impact on me and the way that I write songs.
When you were starting out in your career, were there any of her songs that you would cover or perform, or are there some that you go to if you do karaoke?
I'm terrible at karaoke, so I don't ever do it. But I did cover, when I was 15, I covered You've Got a Friend, a really bad, cheesy version, and I made cassette tapes and gave them to all my friends for Christmas.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you should do it again and give it to them for this Christmas too. So.
Hey, thanks, Maria.
Yeah.
We would have really rather, like, anything else.
That, well, now if they have it, you know, that's a treasure. They could probably sell that.
I wonder
that.
If any of them have it.
You should
maybe
ask.
Somebody does. I bet Brad, maybe Brad Armstrong still has it. I'm going to have to ask him.
Okay, well, thanks so much for talking to us today. If our listeners wanted to find you on social media, where would they need to go?
Well, I think my Instagram is MariaTaylor1111.
Okay.
And I think my Facebook is just Maria Taylor.
And no Twitter.
And I think my Twitter is Maria_Taylor.
Okay. We'll verify all of that, and if we need to switch anything, we'll put it in the notes. Well, thank you again, and we're all excited about your new album, and people can pre-order it right now.